Oh, right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Good morning to you, and my greetings to those who are listening to the recording. Every now and again, you find in the Bible something that seems to be very obscure, and you wonder, what on earth can that mean? We have before us such a Bible reading. And what we're going to do this morning, the title is Away from the Presence of the Lord, which is Pastor Keith's title from our Genesis preaching plan. So what we're going to do this morning, we're going to look at the first wicked character in the Bible. We're then going to look at how do you respond to people who are just as wicked as this wicked person. And then we're going to look at the subject of a revival of religion, which we need so much in this country. So it looks like a very sad end for Cain, a son who seemed to promise so much to Adam and Eve and hope. He was a descendant of Eve the woman. I wonder, did she wonder, can Cain actually be the Messiah who would crush the serpent's head, as we saw a couple of weeks ago, and rid the world of Satan and God's curses on them and on the land? Cain is expelled to the land of Nod, which is a suitable place for Cain, who became a wanderer. A place for wanderers, where there is nowhere for them to put roots. I wonder if you talk to people about the Christian faith, perhaps out and about, perhaps family and friends, perhaps at work, and someone says to you, there are lots of contradictions in the Bible, I don't believe it, and here's one reason why I don't. And this often comes up in conversation. Where did Cain get his wife? No women are mentioned. Where did Cain get his wife? Well, I can tell you where, and moreover, I can tell you what her name was. Cain married his sister. Of course he did. And he, which was Eve's daughter. And her name was Avan. Now, you may wonder, where do I get the name Avan from? Because it's not there in the Bible. It's not there in sacred literature. But it is there in a book that was written about 150 years before the birth of Christ. And it's called the Book of Jubilees. It's a commentary on the Book of Genesis. It's not inspired literature, but it is historical literature from the times. And for Cain, there was no law at that time against intermarriage with your sister until you get to Leviticus 18. So let's come to our first heading this morning. The first wicked character in the Bible. And in fact, this character is the most wicked of characters that you find. Can you put up the Bible reading with verse 23 in, please? Almost. That's it. That will do fine. Now, society is beginning to grow. There are characters, they have occupations, and they have abilities. Cain kills his brother, but lives on and builds a city, and he becomes no longer a nomad, a drifter. The city is a word for a small community. Not necessarily buildings of brick and stone, but could be a community of tents. And this community, let's call it a community, is named after his brother Enoch, who he wants to be remembered. And he's remembered because that's the name of this town or this city. There's sons who are born. There's Arad, whom we know nothing about. He's anonymous and he is never mentioned again. Then there's Jubal, who becomes a nomad, and he is an arable farmer with livestock, sheep and goats. And he has a brother called Jubal. And we would like Jubal very much indeed. He seems to be a harmless character. He's a musician. He played the harp on invented instruments with reed pipes. Then there's Jubal Cain, a practical man. And now he is the father, if you like, of technology. He was a blacksmith and used tools, weapon, and made weapons of bronze and of iron. And then comes Lamech. And I'm going to suggest to you that Lamech is the first wicked, evil character in the Bible. His name means and suggests that he is a warrior, a fighter, a man of conflict. Now, there's no biography for Lamech apart from the names of his two wives. Now then, we need to be warned here. There are some very evil characters in the Bible who have no morality at all and have no concern for others. Lamech is the first of many such characters. What we are told about him, and here it is in our verse 23, he's Cain's great-great-grandson. He made up his own rules and lived exactly how he liked. He was a type of character who said, and we'll see that in what follows in a moment, I will live how I like. He had two wives, and two wives, having two, are against God's rule of one life as set down in the previous chapter. Here was a man who was the first polygamist. Of course, there are others in Genesis, and we'll meet others elsewhere, such as David, such as Solomon. Now, I want you to notice very closely how he speaks to his wives. He summons them. He gives an order. He gives a command. Ada and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech. Listen to what I say. I've killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. Do you notice how he says that? He summons his wives to pay attention. He says, first of all, listen. It's an order. And in grammar, for those who know grammar, it's an imperative, which suggests, do this. Make sure you are listening to me. And then comes a second imperative, where he says, hear. Not only listen, but hear. His second imperative, listen to my voice. In other words, he's saying, you women, make sure you listen. Can you imagine, girls, having a husband like that who summoned you and gave orders so that you had to listen and hear? This man is shouting. He's saying, mark what I say. This is how it's going to be. The two imperatives, listen and hear, this man is a controlling man. Women are to know their place. And their place is hearing and listening to him, their husbands. Now he says, moreover, that he has killed a young man for merely bruising him, probably by accident. And here we have the second murder in the family. Now Lamech knows very well he follows a precedent. Cain, his grandfather, murdered Abel, his great uncle. And God said of Cain that he was not to be killed. He would have a mark, perhaps a tattoo, and to live with his guilt. No one was to avenge Abel by killing Cain. If he was avenged, the avenger had to watch out, because the avenger would suffer seven times. Lamech therefore values his own life. Anyone who kills him for the murder of the boy would pay, according to him, 77 times over. Here's a man who feels no guilt. Here's a man who is wicked, arrogant, opinionated, self-preserved, in an age when there are no police to arrest him, no law and order to bring him to account, no security services to investigate, moreover, no army. And in an age like this, Lamech the anarchist makes his own rules. But that's different to Adam and Eve, because they felt shame. They hid. Cain, moreover, felt remorse when murdering his brother. But Lamech, who I call the most wicked man in the Bible so far, felt nothing when murdering a young man, interested merely in his own self-preservation. His wives, they've got to hear and listen. When they went to the city, well, the meeting place for women, when they went to the well, they would repeat their husband's command. Do you know what he said to me? I had to listen. Then I had to had to hear what he says. And he's justifying himself to kill him, that nice young man who lives down the street. Here he is, the world's second murderer. I will kill who I want to kill. The ruthless husband who is arrogant with no shame. And he even sung and put together this poem, this song, as it appears in verse 23 in our text. He's not heard of again, is Lamech. But it seems that the people followed his lawlessness. When we read, when man began to multiply on the face of the land, daughters were born to them. The sons of God saw their daughters of man were attractive. The Lord saw the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, following the example of Lamech. Why does this character, I wonder, appear in Genesis? What has he got to do with you and me? Well, I think he is a very early warning about self-opinionated arrogance and the arrogant people we have around us these days, who feel they can behave and live how they like. That brings us to a second heading. What do you do when you become the victim of characters like Lamech? What do you do? Some people may think of forgiveness. And I would ask, well, is forgiveness always appropriate? Because there are lots of Lamechs about nowadays. We live in an age, you and I, of bad behaviour. People get attacked and killed. They get robbed and mugged. Victims protest outside the Central Criminal Court and say the sentence that man had is inadequate. There has been no justice for me. You may have neighbours who you describe as, well, neighbours from hell. You may have around you gangs of boys and girls. You may be intimidated, threatened, and you may become the victim of bad behaviour. Now, the bad behaviour of Lamech presents us with one of the great challenges that we face as Christians today. It is the challenge of forgiveness. I ask you to think about this, and think about this very deeply. Jesus seems to say that his followers were always to forgive. 70 times 7 in Matthew 18. In other words, forgiveness is always and limitless. I wonder, does he have Lamech's 70 times 7 in mind when he tells people, his disciples, about forgiveness? Of course, Jesus is right about forgiving. Just as we have been forgiven, and just as we heard earlier from the Lord's Prayer. But forgiveness is hard, particularly when the perpetrator expresses neither guilt nor remorse, and even boasts about his or her crime. that has been done to you, the victim. I ask you to remember from the news from 2019, the killers of Police Constable Andrew Harper. It reminds us that ours is an age of brutality. Forgiveness is said to be a proper response to what happens to you if you become such a victim. If you don't forgive, we're reminded you will become angry, resentful, and bitter. Now, I think we need to take care here when we come across the laments of life. Take care, because we live in what people call nowadays a forgiveness culture, which encourages a hasty response to whatever unfortunately may happen to us. For the church to tell someone to quickly forgive can become a form of spiritual abuse. What do you do when something like this comes your way? On the one hand, it can be quite easy. You and I walk in church at the same time. I tread on your toe. I'm awfully sorry. You say to me, never mind, that's all right. Quickly forgiven, quickly forgotten. But we're considering here, when you think about Lamech's behaviour, just how awful life can be. What do you do should circumstances like that come your way and you find forgiveness so difficult? What I think you do is you take time, no rush. You assess your situation. You obviously talk it over with God, and you sit with some kind person who listens to your story without any hasty solutions. You sit with someone who you can cry with. We need to be aware and cautious, because there are people just like Lamech about in the modern world. Then you come to the third thing, and that's in verse number 26. People began to call on the name of the Lord. Chapter 4 ends with a very wonderful and hopeful subject. This is encouraging for you and me. People in Genesis become weary of people like wicked Lamech's behaviour and his hopelessness. Again and again they tell the story over and over among themselves about Adam and Eve. And they knew what had been lost, and they longed for former times. They wanted to go back. They thought about themselves and became troubled. They looked at themselves, just like Job did or does later, where Job says to his companions, ask the animals and they will teach you, or the birds of the air and they will tell you, or speak to the earth and it will teach you, or let the fish of the sea inform you. Which of all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done all of this? Another son is born, verse 26, and his name is Enosh. Now, Enosh's name suggests he had a delicate constitution. He found work on the cursed land very difficult. And this man, Enosh, is the opposite of Lamech's pride and arrogance. He felt something was missing. Adam and Eve had lost so much. How could Enosh and his company, his family, find God again? Well, it's there in verse 26. At that time, men began to call on the name of the Lord. I suggest that Enosh is so named, having a delicate constitution, because the family wanted recovery. They wanted restitution. They wanted revival. Now, That leads us to a question as ourselves. How may we be revived in our Christianity here and now, nowadays? Not something that we work at or something that we make happen. Revival is not like that. But revival is not you and I passively waiting and expecting something to be done. The second part of verse 26 about calling on the name of the Lord demonstrates humanity, humility, dependence and faith. It's rather like going back to Romans 10, where Paul tells people, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Revival, or calling on the name of the Lord, and here we have the first revival mentioned in the Bible. Revival is a work of God in which believers participate by all the means that are available. Revival goes like this. It is by making Christ known by local evangelism, mission, and outreach. That's number one, making Christ known. Number two is by continuing to preach the gospel, which includes knowing God, knowing his gospel, and delighting in him through the scriptures and having a gospel testimony to share with others. And number three, revival comes by specific believing, united prayer. This is what these people needed in those days when they saw such bad behavior. And this is what we need to be doing in the uncertain times in which we live. So we come to a summary of what we've said about this very difficult chapter. Well, there's Genesis, that's the title of our book, a book of origins. And the book began so well and promised so much. The wonder of creation, a world that was beautiful and was very God. Good. Then disobedience, then murder, and Cain expelled. The family includes the first wicked man in Genesis, and we're well aware there will be others. We are cautioned to be aware of feral people who are about us, just like this character, Lamech. We've considered the appropriate application of forgiveness. And we remembered that the Christian life is looking to God for revival and working among us and with us and working for just that, revival, as we in our day, like them in theirs, call on the name of the Lord. Amen. Well, we have a blessing in our final hymn. Our final hymn is written by John Bunyan, and he used allegory, images and word pictures to convey biblical truth. In verse 3, he uses the word hobgoblin and then foul fiend. A hobgoblin in his day, and I suppose in ours, is something that would frighten or destroy your faith. No, it won't. It won't dint or dent your spirit. He said, no foul fiend. Well, he's referring to the devil, evil. It won't happen. Nothing will diminish or take away your Christianity. These words are robust words, and that's just what we need in our Christianity today. We need a robust Christian faith. And it's there in all of the words of Bunyan's hymn.